To a surprising extent, the sea has remained a mystery. We know less of the ocean of our feet, where we came from, than we do of the sky above our head.
That is President John F. Kennedy speaking in 1963. It was an age of exploration. While NASA was on the front pages trying to put a man on the moon, the Navy was quietly conducting tests to see if humans could live and work on the deep sea floor, with the goal of someday possibly building colonies under the sea. They trained a group of men to be aquanauts, including the astronaut Scott Carpenter. After a successful experiment in the Caribbean in 1965, the aquanauts set out to live in an undersea habitat 200 feet below the surface off the California coast for more than a month. Producer Sarah Kate Kramer and the Radio Diaries team bring us the story of SEALAB.
This is Commander M. Scott Carpenter, who is America's only astronaut aquanaut. With other divers, he's beginning an experiment that will test man's ability to live and work in the sea. Called SEALAB, it is conducted off the California coast.
My name is Chris Stover. My father was Scott Carpenter, a Project Mercury astronaut, and he was fascinated by the sea. It's sort of the opposite of space exploration. In an interview, my dad said, SEALAB is not bright and shiny. It was dark. It was cold. It was dangerous.
Work in the deep water is just not as glorious a pursuit in the minds of most people as flight to the moon, for instance. And it's a cold, dirty place, and it, you can't see very far. You can't go down and take pictures that thrill the world.
But it was a mission that he believed in. For him, the nearness of the ocean. You know, it's right there, and we don't know anything about it.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased and honored to participate today with you in the dedication of SEALAB, which is the Navy's experiment in living beneath the sea.
My name is Ben Helwarth. I'm the author of a book called SEALAB.
Attention, all personnel through the SEALAB area.
So they build this habitat and tow it out about a mile off the coast of La Jolla near San Diego and sink the lab to the bottom, 205 feet of depth. SEALAB basically looked like kind of a cigar-shaped vessel like a submarine with legs like a dinner table on it so it can be propped up on the ocean floor.
Counterweight is in position.
Captain George Bond, the man who was responsible for the SEALAB program, is standing on the Navy barge that's serving as a kind of mothership, feeding SEALAB gases, power, water from the surface. George Bond's idea was we could have these sea bases where divers would have shelter and have access 24/7 to the seafloor, much like a space station in space.
Captain Bond, what is the purpose of all this?
The purpose is to determine whether man can exist on the ocean bottom for the purpose of exploitation and exploration.
You mentioned civilian applications, men down there mining metals, things like that.
I think we will have underwater agriculture. With our expanding population, we're just about to reach the end of our food resources on dry land. And I'm just very happy to be on a new frontier.
SEALAB Control, I hear you loud and clear. Congratulations.
The first aquanauts enter the SEALAB. That's kind of a huge deal. At this point in diving history, rarely would anyone stay at a substantial depth for more than half an hour. And then Bond came up with this concept of saturation diving, which was basically if we allow a diver to stay at a depth or a pressure long enough, at a certain point, it wouldn't matter if he stayed down an hour or a week or a month. The process of decompression is going to be the same. But that was a pretty far out notion. How deep can a diver go? How long can a diver stay down? No one knew.
I'm Richard Blackburn. They call me Blackie. And I was an aquanaut in SEALAB. None of this had ever been done before. We all felt like we were the lab rats, but we were all young, foolish, gung-ho, and thought we were invincible.
Dictating, 8:30, 12 September, 1965.
inside the habitat, they basically are in what would feel like a recreational vehicle, a toilet, a shower with hot water pumped in from the surface. They stock the inside of C-Lab like bread for sandwiches and cans of Chef Boyardee. They also had a kind of closed-circuit TV set up so that those at the surface could kind of watch what was happening.
We have your picture.
Smile, you're on candid camera.
You can't breathe ordinary air at certain depths because air is 4/5 nitrogen. And nitrogen, it turned out, caused a kind of drunken effect when you breathe it at depth. It's just one of the weird realities of breathing underwater. Helium had been found to be a good substitute. And so, as you can hear, they all sound like some falsetto version of Donald Duck.
My dad, he had the ukulele, and he decided to sing in this helium-altered voice.
I should say that deep-sea diving is dangerous all the time, anytime. You've got the pressure, the gas recipes, the temperature of the water, the currents, the creatures who may be around. If you were to surface too quickly, your insides would be like a shaken soda can that got popped open. Bubbles would emerge everywhere, and you'd be dead before you reached the surface.
To commence about 6 hours of intense physiological investigation.
All of this is very different from being in a submarine, because the submarine is protecting you from the pressure in the water outside. Now, you can't leave the submarine. So the idea for C-Lab was you're living in this pressurized atmosphere and you are free to come and go from this environment as you please through a hatch that's left open in the floor. The water does not rush in because the pressure inside is the same as the water pressure outside. Some of the guys would just free dive out of the C-Lab and just experience the wonder of being 200 feet down in the ocean at night. The divers would tell you they had a blast.
I was excited to see things in the ocean that you normally could not see any other way. Living on the bottom and making continuous dives over a long period of time, you could see these animals doing things undisturbed. And they sort of got used to us.
You got up every morning, went into the ocean. You felt that you were at home. The water was your friend. It got to be where you really wanted to be in the water more than you wanted to be on land because it was so much more peaceful and so much more beautiful.
Every minute and every hour, there are obviously opportunities for something to go wrong. And there were close calls. At one point, Scott Carpenter went outside the habitat and Carpenter's airline got an old-fashioned kink in it like a garden hose. And all he knew was he couldn't breathe. He hastily bursts up through the hatch into the lab, just gasping for breath. Had Carpenter not had the presence of mind to swim back before he just passed out from lack of oxygen, that might have been a whole different story.
My dad was willing to be a guinea pig, gathering information about what happens to the human body under duress. He felt it, there's value in pushing yourself to the very extreme. What can human beings do?
Scott, can you come up on the Instagrammer again, please?
Scott Carpenter lived and worked for a month straight on the bottom, 30 days. That was completely off the charts at the time. A human body surviving at that depth and pressure for that long. And so C-Lab was considered a success. George Bond wants to get Carpenter on the phone with Lyndon Johnson, the President of the United States.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And how do you move that operator?
The White House operators are so confused by the sound of Carpenter's voice, they're acting like it's some crank call.
Sir, it's very garbled, and we have to have a clear connection for the president.
I mean, it took 15 minutes to put my dad on the line.
Scott, do you read me off?
Yes, sir, Mr. President. Hold you loud and clear.
Scott, I'm mighty glad to hear from you. You've convinced me and all the nation that whether you're going up or down, you have the courage and the skill to do a fine job.
Well, thank you very much. There were a lot of other people who...
Living underwater, now this is not just science fiction. This is a real thing. we could have these sea bases for military purposes, for scientific purposes, for exploration, this opens up the door to all sorts of possibilities.
Barry Simmons from Channel 10, San Diego. Captain Bond, would you cite some of the achievements of this experiment for us?
Probably the greatest highlight is what I see here today. Something that started in the face of cries that this is madness, you're wasting your time and the Navy's time. Today, we have demonstrated operationally that this can be done.
By early 1969, the Navy decided to take this up a notch to go all the way to 600 feet.
600 feet, that's a quantum leap. You conditioned your mind to accept the risks and to try to foresee any problems. But, of course, there's a lot of unforeseen problems that you just can't predict.
The deeper you go, the more complicated it gets for the health of the human body. Every 33 feet, you add another atmosphere worth of pressure. So 66 feet, two atmospheres, 99 feet, three atmospheres, and so on down to the bottom of the sea.
Monitor Control, this is Capsule 2 for communications check.
Here at the experiment site, aquanauts make final preparations, and C-Lab is lowered into the ocean.
The morning of the dive, we got everything ready to go. And then we found out that the lab was leaking.
Okay, I'd like to get all members of Team 1 over here.
So the lab is leaking, but the Navy decided to go ahead with this experiment. We can still do this, is the feeling. And one of the ways we can address this is by getting the aquanauts down there and having them attend to the leaks.
Now, they started the lowering process to get us to the bottom. It took about an hour.
So they're sitting in the pressurized elevator, and they realize right away that they're really cold.
There was no heat. It was supposed to be heated. You get 10 times colder breathing helium than you do air. The cold was so bad that our bodies were shaking like we were in convulsions. Once we got on the bottom, and we didn't do the kind of detailed checklist we would have normally done, we would just, let's get in the water and get that thing fixed.
With their elevator on the ocean floor, aquanauts Barth and Cannon head for the habitat. The problem is apparent to them as they approach. The light helium oxygen atmosphere of C-Lab is bubbling out into the sea.
Bob and Barry swam out to the lab. Barry had the responsibility to fix that electrical problem. At the same time, Bob was trying to push the hatch open. And then all of a sudden, we hear a scream, and John and I look at each other and say, what is that?
He sees his partner, Barry Cannon, in trouble on the ocean floor. He rushes to Barry's aid. Cannon is shaking. His mouthpiece has come loose, allowing his vital breathing gas to escape.
When I reached Barry, his mouthpiece was floating above his head. I tried to jam it into his mouth. I couldn't get it in. So I went arm over arm, and the three of us were able to pick him up and get him in the diving bell. I gave him mouth to mouth, but as the time went on, he got colder and colder and colder, and we gently as possible laid him out on a bunk, closed his eyes, and we all just sat there and looked at each other.
Good evening. A civilian U.S. aquanaut taking part in the nation's most ambitious underwater living experiment to date died today in water 600 feet deep off the Southern California coast.
The Navy says it will suspend diving operations until it's known exactly what happened.
After Barry Cannon's death, there was this investigation to try to assess blame, figure out what went wrong. And ultimately, the Navy decided to abandon C-Lab altogether and quietly canceled the program. Certainly, the Navy divers were all greatly disappointed. Their divers felt that Barry Cannon himself would have said, hey, we all knew we were taking risks here, and just because we lost someone doesn't mean we should lose this whole program.
I mean, it was depressing. I would have liked to have seen the C-Lab program go on, but that wasn't a priority for the big picture.
I think my dad felt that it was inevitable, given the death of Barry Cannon and the war in Vietnam. The Navy just didn't have the bandwidth to do C-Lab.
Captain Bond, is it possible sometime in the far distant future that we may have cities under the sea or things like that?
I don't predict that we will have cities, but I think we will have colonies of people. living on the ocean bottom year-round.
George Bond's dream that you should be able to house people in the oceans, that vision kind of died with C-Lab. And nowadays, we know things about galaxies billions of light years away. But there's huge swaths of the ocean that are unexplored. There's still a lot of mystery to it.
Well, good luck to you in the C-Lab. That's it for now. Thanks very much for joining us. And until next time, good evening.
The saturation diving techniques pioneered by C-Lab were later used by the Navy for undersea espionage during the Cold War. Many of the Aquanauts went on to work as saturation divers in the oil industry's offshore drilling projects. This story was produced by Sarah Kate Kramer and the team at Radio Diaries. To hear the complete story, you can check out the Radio Diaries podcast.